It is gone! A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Tagora on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 450. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, the JT Real Muto dominoes continue to fall. How much longer is this man going to make us wait? Seems like all of the stars are aligning for him to come back to Philadelphia, and more dominoes fell this week. We'll get into those coming up here in just a second. Also, we'll talk about the Phillies pitching staff. Last week, we talked about 12 left-handers that we think the Phillies should pursue, and it sure sounds like that they are going to need to add some additional starting pitchers to their rotation. And we'll give a quick check on where the Phillies' finances stand. We know they're going to pull back, but where are they at right now, and how much can we reasonably think that they'll add to the payroll? Also, I'm going to talk to one of my favorite guests here on the podcast, New York Times national baseball writer Tyler Kepner. We'll talk about all things Phillies and get his thoughts on how the rest of the offseason has gone so far as well. Plus, I'll have your stat of the week. But let's get into this right now, and let's talk about those JT Real Muto dominoes, everybody. And we saw yet another potential JT Real Muto suitor over these last couple of days seemingly fall by the wayside. This next team, the Toronto Blue Jays. What would appear to be out of the JT Real Muto business after they signed George Springer to a huge deal. They are rumored, they had been rumored to also be looking at Michael Brantley, but they didn't sign him. But they signed Kirby Yates this week and are also looking at some other pitching options as well. So we suspected that the Blue Jays basically had enough money for one $100 million plus signing, and that was it. They went out and they got George Springer to perhaps give themselves the best outfield in the American League, but JT Real Muto has another suitor, again, fall by the wayside. And so this is great news for the Phillies on a couple different fronts here. One, obviously, like I mentioned, it doesn't sound like the Blue Jays have any more money to spend on JT Real Muto. The other is that the Mets did not get George Springer, and it really felt like there was a lot of momentum for Springer to go to the New York Mets, and thankfully that didn't happen. It would not have been fun facing that guy in the division 18 times a year, every year for the next 4 or 5 years. So George Springer will go to Toronto, and he'll terrorize the American League East up there, whereas we also now have one less potential suitor for JT Real Muto, and we have a little bit more clarity on the money that we had been talking about on the last podcast. Jason Stark had previously reported a 5-year deal worth nine figures, but we didn't have an exact number over $100 million. Well, John Heyman is reporting that the Phillies are believed to have offered $110 million in their deal for Real Muto. Perhaps that's one of the reasons why he hasn't signed it just yet, because, you know, JT Real Muto still wants to earn more than $23 million a season. That is the average annual value record for a catcher that he is trying to break. The Phillies would have to get it to just a little over $115 million in order to cross the $23 million a year barrier so he can break that record. And, you know, maybe the Phillies have started at $110 million, thinking that Real Muto's camp would counteroffer something in the 120 range, and maybe you meet in the middle. I don't think that JT Real Muto's camp can expect a whole lot more than 115, 120, given the fact that really, the Phillies are the only ones left at the dance here. And I think I mentioned this before on the podcast. It would be a nice symbolic gesture for the Phillies to go ahead and make JT Real Muto the highest paid catcher in terms of AAV all time. When you're talking about a 5-year deal, is there really any harm to it? Like, is there really any harm by giving this guy an extra $5 million, giving him an extra $1 million a year, if it means he can call himself the highest paid catcher of all time? To deny him, like, if it's $110 million and to come in $1 million a year under what he's asking for, just to me doesn't sound great. You know, just go ahead and, and who knows if the John Heyman number is accurate, right? I mean, we don't know that the John Heyman number is accurate. We're just kind of taking a guess here. I would hope that the Phillies would not just come in at $1 million under, you know, the all-time record. And who knows what JT Real Muto's camp is still asking for. Maybe they're still asking for 150. They're not getting it. I don't think they're going to get, I don't think there's another team out there that's going to even offer him more than $100 million a year. But it would be the, and baseball teams aren't really, you know, they don't really get, they're not successful. Billionaires aren't successful by necessarily being nice and overpaying people. But I don't think making JT Realmuto the highest paid catcher of all time would be overpaying him. Is he the best catcher of all time? No, he's not. But he's the best catcher in baseball right now. And a $115 million contract over 5 years sounds reasonable to me. And if it's 110, if it's a difference between 110 and 115, then, and JT Realmuto is making that a sticking point, then I can't imagine that the Phillies would allow a very small gap like that to get in the way of getting a deal that they very clearly want to have done. You know what I mean? The Phillies want this deal to get done. They want JT Realmuto. They're just not going to bid against themselves here, nor should they. But at the end of the day, getting this thing done is what's most important. And again, if the money is not if there's not a huge gap, then you'd like to see the Phillies move towards JT Realmuto a little bit. So obviously, we don't know where these negotiations stand right now, and hopefully, these two sides will come to an agreement soon. You know, George Springer off the market, really. Realmuto and Trevor Bauer are the only guys left on the free agent market who most believe will get $100 million plus. And you have to wonder if the Phillies added a sixth year. That might lower the average annual value, but would JT Realmuto sign on for a sixth year? I'd be less comfortable with a six-year deal for Realmuto. I'd rather give him a little bit more AAV and a five-year deal as opposed to a six-year contract. But I saw Jim Bowden mention that if the Phillies went to a sixth year, the deal would be done. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, but it could be that JT Realmuto would be willing to trade a little AAV for an extra year. But right now, it sounds like 5 years and 115 to 120 is a sweet spot for a deal to get done. And if JT Realmuto's asking price is higher than that, he probably is going to need to bring it down. And if the Phillies' asking price or offer is lower than that, I would hope that they would bring it up just a little bit. And that seems like a nice middle ground that gives JT what he wants, and it gives the Phillies what they want, really, for it doesn't sound like a whole lot more than they're willing to spend right now anyway. But if you're looking at other potential suitors, and again, we talked about this a little bit, let's just kind of review where some of these other teams are. I mean, the Angels signed Kurt Suzuki. They appear more interested in trading for Wilson Contreras than signing JT Realmuto, although I guess you would have to consider the Angels still a possibility. But if you sign Kurt Suzuki, you're not doing that with the intention of also signing JT Realmuto. So I don't see the Angels as being a fit. Frankly, the Nationals are the team that worries me the most. They have Yan Gomes, but would make him a backup for Realmuto in a heartbeat. But they've been signing bargain guys like Josh Bell and Kyle Schwarber so far. Kyle Schwarber is a, you know, decent sized contract, but these are not studs, and they're not signing anybody to multi-year deals here. So the Nationals scare me as a swoop-in team to kind of steal somebody away from the Phillies and really hurt us within the division, but it doesn't sound like the Nationals are that aggressive this offseason, so I don't think they're in the market. The Yankees signed DJ LeMahieu, and they have pitching concerns now that they have to turn their attention to. The Astros just signed Michael Brantley to a two-year deal, so they got Michael Brantley back. They're fortifying their offense a little bit in that way, and they can't afford to give up the draft picks that they would need to give up in order to sign JT Realmuto, who was offered a qualifying offer. The Cardinals could sneak into this thing, but they're more likely to sign Yadier Molina, it sounds to me. And we already know that the Phillies have a five-year, nine-figure offer out there that probably isn't going to be matched by anyone. The New York Mets, of course, went out, and I don't understand. I still don't understand why they did this necessarily, but they went out early and got James McCann. So all of these suitors, and the Dodgers have Will Harris. They don't need a catcher. So all these teams that you would think would be interested in JT Realmuto, they've all filled their catching needs elsewhere, or they are focusing their money in other places. It just makes too much sense. So what's the timeline here? Well, obviously I don't know, you don't know, and I don't think the Phillies necessarily know, but with the suitors dwindling, it's just a matter, it seems to me, of haggling over money, and that should be something that should be fairly easy. If both sides are being realistic, you should be able to come to some kind of agreement, and I would think rather quickly on it. And I keep hearing that it's going to be better, you know, it's going to be later than sooner. Why? Why? There are no more suitors around. There are no more other teams that JT Realmuto can kind of get into the mix here. I'm sure his agents are trying, but no one else is going to get into this thing right now. So, you know, I really feel like Realmuto should be signing this contract relatively soon. Maybe this week, maybe next week. I have no inside information on that at all, but a delay here doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And we have to just take all this with a grain of salt, because there is still the possibility the Phillies don't sign him. I don't see it. It sounds like everyone you hear feels great about this happening, just that it's going to happen, that he's going to come back to Philadelphia. And, you know, if that's the case, then you have to give the Phillies a lot of credit for understanding the market and for knowing what the market was, and maybe getting lucky. You know, I think the Phillies also have gotten lucky. I think they got lucky when the Mets decided to go with McCann, and they decided to invest their time in trading for Francisco Lindor and signing other people. But I really thought that he was going to end up in New York, but the Mets had other ideas. And if this were happening during a non-pandemic offseason, the Phillies probably don't get JT Realmuto back. However, without the pandemic, maybe they sign him to the contract extension last March also. So, you know, you just, in the alternate universes of our minds, any number of different things could have happened here with JT Realmuto. But in this particular earth, in this universe, the Phillies are in the clubhouse as the leaders for JT Realmuto, and hopefully a deal gets done, maybe even before you've gotten a chance to listen to this podcast. So we're talking about JT Realmuto. We're talking about adding him to the payroll. Where do the Phillies' finances stand right now? After signing Bradley to an Archie Bradley to a $6 million deal, they are at about $148 million, according to Kotz Contracts. The luxury tax is set for about $210 million this year, but they're not going to approach that. Last year, they spent about $207 million, again, according to Kotz Contracts, on contracts. So that puts them about $61.7 million under the tax. That's where they are, according to Kotz. So let's assume they give Realmuto $115 over 5 years, and let's say that that's $23 million a season. And let's talk about some of the other needs that they need to fill. We've heard a lot about them possibly re-signing Didi Gregorius and potentially a two-year $30 million deal for him, which would sound about right. That's about $15 million in average annual value, a slight raise over last year's $13 million. Bringing those two guys back puts the team at $186 million. They are likely to add a couple of bargain starters, which we're going to talk about in just a second. Likely $2 to $3 million each. Maybe they sign somebody to like a $4 or $5 million each. But let's say that they sign two starters for about $5 million total. That puts them at about $190 million. Or at least I said $4 million. So they're at around $190, $191 million. So that keeps them about $20 million under the tax. I'm not sure they want to go any higher than that. So just crunching the numbers, if Realmuto gets a $20 million AAV deal, he doesn't get to break Posey's record, but it does give them more room to sign a guy like Gregorius and some additional pitching, another starter, another reliever. And I would imagine that's part of the argument they're making to JT Realmuto. Hey, listen, you know, we can give you this, but we want to keep it at around $105, $110 million. That gives us a little bit more money to sign Didi Gregorius, maybe sign another relief pitcher, which I still think they need to do, and get a couple more starters in here in order to help fill out this rotation. Now, Realmuto's camp, I'm sure, fires back with, hey, those are self-imposed limitations. There's no salary cap in Major League Baseball. There is a luxury tax, but you could sign Realmuto and Gregorius and starting pitching and relief pitching and still stay under the luxury tax. And the Phillies absolutely could do that. They could fill all of their needs with the remaining $20 million if you give Realmuto and Gregorius the deals that I just outlined. They could also sign a guy like Marcus Semien to a one-year deal for about probably, what, $10 million? Or Andrelton Simmons for a one-year deal, maybe like $7, $8 million, something like that. Gives you more money for the pitching staff. It's one of the reasons why I'm not sure that Gregorius is as much of a sure thing as some people might be hinting at right now. Gregorius would be a wonderful thing for this lineup. He would obviously help the lineup tremendously. He was one of their most consistent and clutch hitters last year. He provides a lot of balance to the lineup. He would be an incredibly welcome addition, and he plays good defense too at shortstop. So obviously we would all love to see Didi Gregorius back, but if this team is looking to really trim back payroll by like $30 million, they probably can't afford Realmuto and Gregorius and add a couple more starters and maybe another relief pitcher. They probably have to go on the cheaper end of things with the shortstop position in order to add a couple more starters and at least one more relief pitcher. But again, these are self-imposed limitations by the Phillies because of what they said was pandemic-related shortfalls in finances. And obviously they didn't make as much money last year. They also didn't pay players as much money last year because they played a 60-game season. So that's also something to take into account. But that's where the salary situation is right now, and we don't know exactly how much Middleton and the rest of the front office wants to pull back. I will say, and I said this last week, that I really do think Dave Dombrowski has had an effect on this front office. I think Dombrowski has garnered a lot of trust from the front office. I think that he's really convinced this front office we can compete here in 2021 if you just give us a little bit of money. And I think that with a guy like Dombrowski calling the shots as opposed to a guy like Matt Klintak, it gives the front office more confidence to make moves where I don't think they would if Matt Klintak was the GM. If Matt Klintak was the GM right now, I don't think the Phillies are going after JT Realmuto. I don't think they're being nearly as aggressive in going after JT Realmuto. They might not even have signed a guy like Archie Bradley to a $6 million deal. So I think Dave Dombrowski has had a real impact and a real effect on John Middleton and the rest of the ownership group. It remains to be seen whether that actually means the Phillies will sign players here over these next few weeks. There's a lot of talk, and we got a lot of talk going on, but we got to see if some action occurs out of all this outside of the Archie Bradley signing. So finishing up here in the opening segment, talking about the pitching depth, Jim Salisbury reported on Wednesday that the Phillies are still looking at free agent pitchers for depth. Now, again, we went over the 12 left-handed starters the team should pursue last week. Since then, John Lester, J-Hap, and Jose Quintana have all been signed. So some of these starting pitchers are starting to fly off the shelves. The Phillies have been linked to Anibal Sanchez, who threw with Julio Teheran for scouts at a workout this week. Sanchez had a terrible season last year, which we've talked about. Teheran also was not good last year, but he's always been an interesting pitcher. And aside from Bryce Harper always destroying him, he's always been pretty good against the Phillies. He's still going to be just 30 years old this year. He pitched in the Braves rotation from 2013 to 2019. We've seen him a ton here in Philadelphia, but he pitched with the Angels last year. The former two-time All-Star was terrible in Anaheim with a 10.05 ERA in 31 and a third innings. But again, a pandemic-shortened season. So just like Anibal Sanchez was very good in 2019, Julio Teheran has been consistently good to decent from 2013 to 2019, but definitely fell off a cliff last year. So by all accounts, the two starters seem to throw pretty well. Neither guy excites me necessarily, but if you're looking for bargain guys and you're just looking for innings here, those are two guys you could potentially look at because neither guy was hurt last year. They were just unproductive, and we still don't really have any way of knowing whether or not pitchers who struggled last year struggled because of the pandemic, starting in spring training, shutting everything down, trying to get restarted again in a much shorter summer camp, and having that negatively affect their seasons. But for some pitchers, I'm sure it hurt them. For others, it didn't hurt them at all. And so we don't really know what the effects of the pandemic were on certain starters last year. If you're looking at some other potential starters who could be out there, Mike Fiers is a potential candidate. He pitched for Dombrowski previously. Also, Rick Porcello, who pitched for Dombrowski, former American League Cy Young Award winner, could be a cheap ad. Trevor Cahill is also another right-handed starter who could be gotten cheaply. And then some of the left-handed names that I mentioned last week, Paxton, Brett Anderson, Gio Gonzalez, Cole Hamels are all still left-handed options. They might sign two of those guys. And as far as filling out the back of the rotation in-house, I think a guy like Ranger Suarez is a guy who the Phillies will take a long look at in spring training as a left-handed option to be a guy who can eat some starter innings. Because here's the situation, and we talked about it, and it really seems to be gathering a lot of steam. There are going to need to be a lot of starters on hand for every team in Major League Baseball because of how few innings starters pitched last year. We talked about it last week. I mean, Nola and Wheeler, I think, had pitched it like 76 innings each. You can't expect these guys to all pitch 180 and 200 innings this year. I think you're going to see a rash of injuries if you try to push guys too hard. And, you know, maybe that means that you sign a bunch more teams, sign more long relievers. And we still don't know even how many players are going to be allowed to be active. You know, if there's going to be a 26, 27-man roster again this year, there should be. We're still playing in a pandemic. I would imagine the roster situation will be similar to what it was last year. There should be 27-man rosters that allow you to keep some extra bullpen guys, and the Phillies certainly are going to need to add some more bullpen guys as well. As far as relievers, Salisbury reports they're still scouring the market for options, including guys like Jake McGee, Joaquin Soria, Steve Cishek, Cam Bedrosian, Darren O'Day, Tony Watson, Anthony Bass, Shane Green, Justin Wilson, all all veteran relievers who have had a decent track record of some success here in the majors, some more than others, that the Phillies really need a couple guys like that to help fill out the bullpen. Because you're not going to want to push your starters too far. You're not going to want to be shoving these guys 7-8 innings. As much as Dombrowski wants to see starters pitch deep into games, and he does, he's an old school baseball guy in that way, they still have to take care of their arms here in 2021. This is still going to be a different kind of season here in 2021. We might get a full 162. It sounds like we're going to get a full 162, but it might look different. Right? We talked about that. It might look a little different. You might have a bunch of seven-inning doubleheaders early in the season, and you might have 27, 28-man rosters so that you're going to have some bullpen games. You're going to have some games where you're not pushing the starters more than five or six innings, even if they're pitching well, because you have to start off slow here at the start of the season. Now, maybe we'll find that as pitchers begin spring training, it's spring training like any other, and they just start ramping it up, and they get themselves up to where they can throw 100 pitches in a game, 110 pitches in a game. And I think with the Phillies long-term, with Dave Dombrowski here, you're going to see them use their starters more than I think maybe most other teams will, because that the trend is not to let your starters face a lineup the third time through. But with the Phillies, I think this year, like with other teams too, they're going to need six starters. They're going to need seven starters. They're going to have some rotations that, you know, maybe are six man rotations and you know have additional guys there. And when you're talking about Spencer Howard and Vince Velasquez, two guys who didn't throw more than 30 innings last year, you can't rely on them. You can't just have five starters, even if you're going to use Ranger Suarez. You got to go out and get guys, even if they are like, and they're not going to be exciting, but a guy like Anibal Sanchez helps you. A guy like Julio Teheran helps you. Mike Fiers will help you. Rick Porcello will help you. They're not Trevor Bauer. They're not top-end guys, but they are guys that can help in this kind of a season, in this kind of a situation. And so look for those types of moves. They're more likely to sign starting pitchers and relief pitchers than to go out and get an impact shortstop. So don't be surprised if you see them go out and get some of these guys because they're starting to fly off the shelves. We saw Quintana and Lester and Happ all get signed this week. So that market is starting to move. The Phillies need to get moving on that market if they plan on upgrading the starting rotation and adding some much-needed depth, and I think they will start signing some of those guys here over the next couple of days. So we're going to get into all this now, coming up here in the next few minutes with the great Tyler Kepner, New York Times national baseball writer. We're going to talk to him about the Phil's offseason, all the Real Muto stuff, and his impressions of the offseason so far. That's coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And joining me to talk a little bit about the Phil's and the hot stove is one of my favorite guests in the world, Tyler Kepner. Of course, you know him as the national baseball writer for the New York Times and the author of one of the best baseball books I've read in a very long time, K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. I've got it right next to me here. If you didn't get it for somebody for Christmas, you can get it for them for Valentine's Day. You know, that's the next one coming up. So make sure that you hop out there somewhere and get yourself a copy of Tyler's fantastic book and read all of his great stuff in the New York Times. And of course, you probably already follow him on Twitter at Tyler Kepner. Tyler, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you, buddy?
Good, John. How you doing? Thanks for the nice intro.
Absolutely. No, it's all real. It's all true. And it's a pleasure to talk to you as always, because we get to talk about some Phillies baseball with a fellow 1980 Phillies baseball fan. As most of you listening know, Tyler grew up in the Philly area, was a huge Steve Carlton 1983 Phillies guy. And you know, he's dialed into the Phillies as much as the rest of Major League Baseball. You know, the first comment or question for you is, what does it feel like, you know, with now that we finally have a Phillies fan as president of the United States? I mean, this can only mean good things for the Phils, right?
I guess, yeah. I don't know who the last one would be, if any. That's a good question. But yeah, he's you know, he's an Eagles fan too.
That's right.
So yeah, it's Prescott local. I mean, it's Jill Biden, Dr. Jill Biden, mm-hmm. is from Willow Grove.
That's right.
Which is pretty close to where I grew up and went to their mall many times. So yeah, so that's kind of cool, you know, to think you got a first lady from Willow Grove and a president who is a Phillies and Eagles fan. I love it.
Well, we're going to work on getting Dr. Biden on the podcast here at some point this year. I'm sure she'll say yes. Why wouldn't she? She's got nothing else to do, right?
Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Let's jump into things here. And obviously, as Phillies fans, we're really focused on the JT Realmuto market. Of course, the Toronto Blue Jays signing George Springer to a free agent deal. That would seemingly take them out of the running for JT Realmuto at this point. And I know John Heyman reported that he's heard the deal that the Phillies have out there to Realmuto is for 5 years and $110 million. What are you hearing about JT Realmuto and where his other suitors may lie at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see another real obvious fit or a team that's going after him. I haven't heard of one. I mean, if there's a mystery team out there, you never know. Some team, you know, when you're looking at a length of contract like that, you know, I think teams can, you know, figure that maybe they'll be winning in a year or two, if not now, and he can be a piece of that. So then you start looking at some of the, you know, the lower payroll, or the, you know, the teams in the lower end of the standings. But I, you know, you haven't really heard any of that. That's all just guesswork. So I kind of think he's got to come back to the Phillies because I don't know where else he's going to get the kind of money he seeks. It just doesn't seem like the teams that would spend that kind of money would be in the market for him right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You look at the Yankees, you look at the Astros, you look at the Dodgers, you look at all these other teams that you would think would want to jump in or has the money to jump in, but they haven't because they either have an answer at catcher already or have made big expenditures so far this offseason. And even a team like the Yankees, they're not going way over the luxury tax this year. I mean, every team around Major League Baseball except for the Mets is really trying to pull back.
Right. And it seems like it could be working out pretty well for the Phillies in the way the landscape has changed from what we thought. I mean, you know, you went into it thinking, well, maybe the Yankees will just drop Gary Sanchez, you know, the Mets have a new owner. Blue Jays are going to be aggressive. The Angels have some needs. The Angels signed Kurt Suzuki, and the Mets signed James McCann, and you know, and the Yankees kept Sanchez. So I don't know. I mean, you know, Washington is, you know, Washington loses Suzuki, but you know they've already added a few other guys. So I think it's working out better than I would have thought, because I would have thought there'd be heavy competition for him, which would force them to go to a number that would be uncomfortable. And that's usually what you have to do in free agency, is go to an extra year or a figure that you'd rather not go to just to secure the player. But we haven't seen that yet.
I think what is, it's so hard to gauge what this team is going to do over these next few weeks talking about the Phillies here, because we don't know how much they really want to spend. They're not going to go up to the luxury tax like they have the last couple of years. I think that much seems obvious, but how much less that they're willing to spend, even that feels like it's changed since Dave Dombrowski came aboard. I mean, it didn't sound like they were going to spend any money this year, and there was that minute and a half where it sounded as though they were looking to trade Zach Wheeler. Remember those rumors that really caught fire and were shot down rather quickly? And I guess, what do you think about Dave Dombrowski and the fact that maybe he's had on this front office and maybe had on John Middleton and the rest of the owners group? Because it certainly sounds and feels as though this team under the direction of Dombrowski is pushing a little bit more than I think we thought they were going to.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. They still haven't done very much. I mean, they've improved their bullpen. It would be hard not to improve it, really, but you know, you like the Bradley signing, and you know, I love Alvarado's stuff, you know, that he's shown in the past. So you know, they've made a couple of small additions there, but they still need to prove you know that they're, you know, that they're going to spend, and until they get Realmuto, you know, I think the jury's still out on that. But I mean, you don't hire Dave Dombrowski to make small moves around the margins. He's a big game hunter, and he's you know, the kind of guy who is really good at capping a you know, putting a cap on a team that's really close, you know, putting the team over the edge.
And yeah,
so I do still expect that, but we haven't seen it yet. So,
right.
You know, jury's still out.
Sure. It's fair to pump the brakes a little bit for sure. And whatever rumors we might be hearing, and we're hearing, you know, Didi Gregorius rumors, and that's a possible reunion. And, you know, bringing those two guys back would obviously, you know, getting the band back together for what was a pretty good offense for the pandemic shortened 2020 season. I guess I kind of want to get your thoughts on where you think the Phillies stand. Let's and this is, again, this is taking a long walk off a short pier maybe, but let's assume they get Realmuto, and let's say they sign Archie Archie Bradley. Let's say that, let's even just say that they re-sign Didi Gregorius, and let's say that's it. Where do you see them in the National League East, given what the Mets have added this offseason, given where what the Braves have done over these last couple of years, and given the fact that really last year the Marlins seemed to get the best of the Phillies, especially late in the season, and you know the Washington Nationals were injury riddled but won the World Series 2 seasons ago?
It is a stacked division. I mean, I think it's probably the best division top to bottom in baseball, and that makes it really hard to figure out. I think you have to give the respect to the Braves. They deserve it. They were one game away from the World Series. They've got a lot of young, dynamic players. At the moment, they don't have Ozuna back, and that's a hole, but they tend to find a way to fix that. So, you got to respect the Braves and put them ahead of the Phillies. The Mets, the Mets look pretty good on paper. I mean, they've gotten a couple more starters, and obviously Lindor, who I expect they would sign. I'd be surprised if they traded for him and didn't sign him. And McCann. So, I mean, the Mets have been doing things. Washington's made some improvements. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say the Phillies are last in the division. I feel like, over time, they're still probably better than the Marlins. But they're still, to me, a fairly top-heavy roster in that they have probably like six players who are outstanding, championship caliber players, it seems. And then the rest of the roster has a lot of questions, and you need more than six top players to win. I'm talking about Nola and Wheeler. And I mean, Eflin had a real good season. So you take him for sure, but Nola, Wheeler, and Alec Boehm and Hoskins, Harper, McCutcheon. So, they've got a good start, but I still don't think they're as deep as some of the other teams out there.
Sure, and there's still a few weeks to get to the finish line, and even into spring training there will probably be some players still available. My guess is some pitchers available for the Phillies to go out and get. And given how few innings everyone in Major League Baseball pitched last year, it seems like a lot of teams are looking at getting as much starting pitching as they can, or at least talking about it. I know the Padres have talked about using a six-man rotation, just getting Joe Musgrove, and with the other additions that they've made this offseason. The Phillies have a five-man rotation right now, where you still have Vince Velasquez scheduled every fifth day, and Spencer Howard, a guy who has never even come close to pitching more than 100 innings in any season, combined minor leagues and major leagues. And so, there are some pitchers out there that, not named Trevor Bauer, who could be useful to the Phillies and probably grabbed on 1 or 2 year deals. Are there any of the free agent pitchers out there that you've seen? And I know that one of the teams you cover, the Yankees, also have a need for starting pitching. What's out there that you think would benefit a team like the Phillies or the Yankees, who are looking for some back end depth?
Well, we saw yesterday, Jose Quintana sign with the Angels. The Yankees got Corey Kluber, but they had to pay $11 million for the right to try out Corey Kluber and see if he can pitch for the first time in a couple of years. It's a big, that's a big dollar figure. So these guys are still getting paid. I mean, Tanaka's probably the best pitcher still in the market, but you think he's probably going to go back to to Japan is kind of how it seems, or come to the Yankees. Taiwan Walker, you'd be taking a little bit of a risk there because he's had an up and down track record. There's just there are guys. I mean, I think a lot of it, though, what we're seeing is if you can find a guy, you got to be able to find a guy that see something in a guy who other people don't. The Phillies did that with, for example, Charlie Morton a few years ago.
They did, yeah.
He just got hurt after four starts, and then Houston ended up, getting him. But the Phillies probably should have just held on to him. I mean, Jake Odorizzi. I mean, he didn't have much of a year last year, but he could be a bounce back kind of guy. That's a guy I wouldn't mind taking a look at, he's done pretty well over the course of his career. I'd take him in the middle of the rotation. So. Maybe you get a bounce back from a Chris Archer or somebody. There are guys you can get, and if you're pitching, people see something that can turn them around, whether it's a new pitch or a new angle or something. That might be the way to go. It's not something you really hang your hat on, but short of Bauer, there don't seem to be a lot of guys in free agency who automatically are going to elevate a team to, you know, right, first place kind of status.
Most teams, like we've mentioned, have kind of sat out this offseason so far, and there's still a lot of free agents out there on the market that will probably be had for much less than they ordinarily would have been gotten for in different offseasons. But there have been a few teams that have been very active. Obviously, the Mets have been active. The Padres have been active. The White Sox have been active. And I think the Blue Jays have tried to be active, and you know, they finally got a big name in George Springer and maybe aren't done yet. What team do you think has had the best offseason so far?
Well, I think if you were to look at the Padres and say that this is a team that was coming off of such a good season, 37-23, the second best record in the National League, and then, yeah, they would lose Clevinger, but they had kind of, it was sort of trending that way at the end of the year anyway. Mm-hmm. But to say that they would get Blake Snell and Darvish and Joe Musgrove, I mean, you don't just add three starting pitchers like that in an mm-hmm. offseason to a staff that already had Ahmed and it's got Gore in the minor leagues coming. I mean, they look really, really good and exciting. So I got to think that the Padres probably are winning the offseason right now. It doesn't mean anything,
right,
but they've certainly had a good one. I mean, Toronto, if they finish off Brantley with Springer, Tyler Chatwood, looks like Kirby Yates. I mean, they're improving. You like to see teams that are on the verge or that are on the rise, I guess we should say. Teams mm-hmm. like the White Sox, like the Padres, like the Blue Jays, who got their first taste of the playoffs in a little while and are looking to build off that. You love to see that if you're mm-hmm. a fan. It's what you want. It's like the opposite of what we're seeing maybe with the Reds, where you know, they got to the playoffs for the first mm-hmm. time in a little while, and you know, they're probably going to lose Trevor Bauer and lose some other guys. So you know, I like what those three teams are doing, in particular Toronto, the White Sox, and San Diego.
There have been a number of teams that have been getting rid of players this offseason, not just not signing, but actually shedding some productive players. Which team, and I guess by extension, which fan base has kind of had the worst offseason so far?
Well, I mean, it's just life as a Cleveland fan, but it's discouraging that they can, you know, they always have to go through this cycle of losing their best players. I mean, it happened in their glory years where they came really close to winning a World Series twice, and eventually they had to part ways with Manny Ramirez and Jim Thome when they had many great years left. So yeah, I mean, they did it with Lindor now. No surprise to people, but it still was kind of it's a gut punch when you lose him and Carrasco, the former Phillies prospect who has been there since the Cliff Lee trade in 2009. That's a nice long career with one team. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, he was still signed for a couple more years at a reasonable amount, and he was still productive. But now he has to go. Now Cleveland feels, it seems like they could still win a respectable amount of games because they still do have some really good young pitchers. But they've traded so much in the last few years that it looks like they're definitely heading into a downward cycle. And the trick for the Indians is to make those last as short as possible. They tend not to have the really long, drawn out droughts like we're seeing in Philadelphia right now.
Yeah.
Honestly, so yeah, I'd say for Cleveland, it's certainly been discouraging to say the least. I mean, a few of those NL West teams. I mean, Arizona, Colorado, they haven't done a whole lot, and Pittsburgh continues to kind of strip down to hopefully one day build back up. And St. Louis hasn't done anything. So, you know, there's still some teams. I mean, jury's still out on St. Louis because they haven't done anything. But I know it's, that's a fan base that's much more demanding than people probably realize. Just because the Cardinals matter so much down there. They expect a lot, and they're getting pretty antsy, I know, in St. Louis because they're watching other teams make moves and the Cardinals doing zip.
You know, Tampa went to the World Series last year and took the Dodgers to seven games. And that's a team that just continually churns out good young players and finds reclamation projects from other teams and turns them into great relief pitchers and solid starters and productive bats. And they're always finding ways to put a lineup together that manages to put runs up on the board. And it seems to me like if that team spent any money at all, like even just a modicum of cash, they could be a dynastic team given how well they do with so little money. And after going to the World Series then and turning around and trading Blake Snell, and you're likely not going to replace that guy with anyone at that level, it's disappointing to me. I think that Tampa, you know, is one of the most disappointing, has had one of the most disappointing off seasons as well, just for inactivity and the Blake Snell trade.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, if you want to see what the Rays are with money, just look at the Dodgers.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's where Andrew Friedman went, and the Dodgers develop. They do everything you want. They develop players. They find those overlooked gems elsewhere, the Max Muncy types and Chris Taylors and whatnot. They find those kind of guys, and they can go out and make the big acquisition like Mookie Betts. I mean, you know, so the Dodgers have it all going, and the Rays have part of it, and they have that innovation and willingness to do things differently, which bit them in the last World Series game with Snell coming out early. But it does tend to work in the long haul. You're right, though. I mean, it's a weird thing with the Rays. You know, should we look at them as a great success story, which they are given their payroll constraints, or should we knock them for those payroll constraints and say that, man, they're so close, if they would only just invest a little bit more? Then again, it's not as if the fans fill that ballpark. They rarely show up. They don't like where it's located and all that. So it's a weird situation. But I do feel like, God, you know, why? How bad is it if you have to let Charlie Morton go? He just had, he did what you wanted him to do for 2 years. Yeah, he's a little bit old, but you had an option for him for 15.
Yeah.
Just pick it up.
Yeah.
What's so bad about that?
Yeah.
It's not my money, but it's like, come on. And,
right.
and Snell letting him go, you know, the Rays are almost immune to criticism because they just do things unconventionally that work. And it's like, well, they got to figure it out, but still sometimes it does. You're right. Kind of make you sigh a little bit because it's like, oh man, you know, like they signed Snell to a reasonable contract. They signed Morton to a reasonable contract. And if they can't keep the guys they've signed to a reasonable contract, what are they doing?
What are we doing?
And I guess what they're doing is they're trying to find dynamic young players, for down the line. And it does tend to work. They're simultaneously both great for baseball because they show that it's possible for, to win with a low payroll, but they're bad for baseball because they win with a low payroll that they just, get rid of their named players all the time. It's a weird situation.
It really is. Really is. The last thing I wanted to ask you about was a piece that you wrote for the New York Times, of course, centering around the New York Mets having to fire their general manager, Jared Porter, who they just hired for baseball for some sexual harassment issues with a reporter who those harassment issues appeared to drum her out of the game. And you know, it's, as you wrote about, this is not an isolated incident. And women reporters, women covering the game, have to deal with a culture that has, in many cases, toxic masculinity. Can you just talk a little bit about the piece you wrote? It was really good, and the situation that women reporters, women broadcasters face in baseball.
Yeah, it's really a shame that they that they in general have to deal with the kinds of issues that I and my male colleagues pretty much don't, which is, you know, not just why is a source helping me out or why is this player being friendly to me, but, you know, or is there an extra layer of does he want to date me? Am I being too nice? And what am I not being nice enough? What am I wearing? You know, all those kind of issues. What are they saying? Women have it pretty tough because, for all those reasons, and they face a lot of harassment online, which I didn't even get into. And so this was an example of, an executive who, is helping out a foreign reporter and then starts a flirtatious text chain that becomes obviously harassing and gross. And so it's just it's an example of the kind of thing that goes on a lot and that shouldn't. And I think it was telling when, a woman reporter on the call with Sandy Alderson asked, for all the references you got, all those glowing references from Jared Porter, did you talk to any women? And he said no. And that kind of says it all. Not that it was Sandy Alderson's fault, but like not a lot of women had ever worked with him in baseball because there aren't a lot of women in baseball.
Yeah.
So it is a very masculine culture. Again, you understand it in some sense because there are only men who play it. But we're seeing Kim Ng now, a general manager with Marlins. We're seeing some women coaches. And what we see, John, is that so much now of baseball is not what you did, it's what you know. And that can be anybody. You know, that can be a man or a woman who can figure out the right kind of spin rates and launch angles and number, you know, figuring out the number, crunching the data and all that. You don't have to have a playing background necessarily to be a coach or an executive anymore. So hopefully we'll see, we'll continue to see, you know, women get those positions of power. The only problem is a lot of times they understandably would rather stay away from a game where the culture can be kind of, you know, unwelcoming.
Yeah. Well, it's a great piece. If you guys haven't read it, check it out in the New York Times. Tyler Kepner does fantastic work for them. And of course, like I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, get his book, K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. It's a really fantastic read. Follow him on Twitter at Tyler Kepner. Tyler, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season. I really appreciate it, buddy.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Well, to wrap things up here, one piece of news from Dave Dombrowski during his Zoom news conference with Archie Bradley talked a little bit about a forgotten man inside the Philadelphia Phillies organization, Odubel Herrera. Odubel Herrera, of course, no longer on the Phil's 40-man roster, but he still is in the organization. Remember, he signed a 5-year, $30.5 million deal back in December of 2016. So he is still on the Phillies, and this is the final year of his contract. He hasn't played in the majors since he was suspended for 85 games under baseball's domestic violence policy. And Dombrowski really didn't say a whole lot to reporters to indicate that Herrera had a chance of coming back. I don't see him coming back. I don't think Herrera is coming back. But Dombrowski said, we're still in a position where we are discussing that internally. He noted that Herrera has gone to counseling, and Dombrowski would only say that Herrera's status is something that the club will continue to talk through from an internal perspective. So with Odubel Herrera, you also have to remember, when he was suspended, he wasn't a good baseball player anymore. I can't imagine that he still is a good baseball player anymore. It's been a long time since he played regularly. I mean, the pandemic last year prevented him from playing on a regular basis. I think he played some winter ball, but not much. I think he played like 2 games in winter ball or something. I thought I saw that the other day with no explanation yet as to why so short. So again, do the Phillies have a need in center field? Sure. Sure, Hazel Quinn, I'm not sure. Either one of those guys can play center field, but you've got a guy like Jackie Bradley Jr. who's out there in free agency. Again, if they want to get Gregorius and pitchers and stuff like that, they probably can't afford Jackie Bradley Jr., no matter how much he would improve the team. So you're probably looking at Adam Haseley and Roman Quinn, hopefully more Haseley than Quinn here in 2021. But Odubel Herrera, I just don't see as a viable option. I just think that they have turned the page, and Dombrowski was asked about Herrera, so of course had to provide an answer, but was very noncommittal on the answer. And I think the Phillies would just be very happy to let Odubel Herrera finish the last year of this deal in anonymity, playing somewhere, doing something other than in Philadelphia. All right, let's get into our stat of the week, and it's a little bit of a sad stat of the week. This week, Don Sutton died at the age of 75. Legendary Dodgers pitcher actually pitched for a bunch of teams from 1966 to 1988, 23 years in the big leagues. He made 4 All-Star teams in those 23 years, finished top 5 in the Cy Young voting 5 straight seasons from 72 to 76, but never higher than 3rd in the Cy Young voting. But here's a guy who was reasonably good, never elite, but consistently very good for long enough to get into the Hall of Fame. I think it does a guy dirty to call him a member of the Hall of Very Good. Don Sutton was probably not one of the elite pitchers of the game. And he probably was a staff ace. Getting into the top 5 of the Cy Young Award voting means you're a staff ace for a number of years. So there's no doubt about the fact that Don Sutton was one of the better starting pitchers in baseball for a time. But he got into the Hall of Fame because of longevity. But there's something to be said for that, especially with a starting pitcher. And when you consider all the numbers and you factor in the length of time that he spent in the big leagues, this is our stat of the week here. Don Sutton is one of 10 pitchers in Major League Baseball history to record 3,000 or more strikeouts, compile 300 or more wins, and finish with an ERA below 3.5. That's an incredible career when you think about that level of consistency year in and year out for 23 years. So happy trails to Don Sutton, passing away at the age of 75 this week, one of the more underrated starting pitchers in baseball history. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Hit and Season. My thanks to Tyler Kepner for coming on the podcast. And just a reminder, folks, to check out the Hit and Season Patreon. We've got lots of cool stuff coming on the Patreon this year, guys. Now's your chance to get in on board the action. And we have a new tier on the Hit and Season Patreon. Check it all out. Go to patreon.com/hitandseason. There's also a new podcast with Justin Clue and Chris Jones, a new Absolutely Hammered up there that you will not want to miss, but you got to sign up on the $5 a month tier in order to get that podcast. Also, we are looking for more ratings and reviews on Apple Podcast at the Good Fight Podcast feed. So let me know what you think of this podcast. Tell me what you think about Hit and Season. And let us know what you think about Continued Success. And, of course, The Dirty Inning, all the great Good Fight podcasts that come to your earballs for free each and every week. Please leave a rating and a review at Apple Podcasts and tell your friends about the podcast as we are getting ramped up here this offseason. Some big things are happening. Get them started listening now to this podcast so they can be in on the ground floor and they can either celebrate or commiserate with us as the doings go on here for the Phillies this offseason. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hit and Season.